Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I'm your host, Mark Roberti, the content marketing expert, bringing you 5 new episodes every week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. And before we get started, I just want to take some time to shine the spotlights on my parents. Today is their 23rd year anniversary, and they've been an essential part of my life and always inspire me to pursue bigger goals. I'm proud to be their son and I'm grateful for all the love and respect they continue showing me to this day. Mom and Dad, I wish you a very happy anniversary. As we attract more people to our content, that content is going to get more engagement. And part of that means more and more people are going to see our content. But if you're able to get all these readers, but you're not able to convert them into a single sale, then you just have a hobby that a lot of people are paying attention to. So we need to turn more of the readers that we're getting for our blogs, and this also applies on a larger scale to videos and podcasts, into buyers. So how exactly do we do that? Well, that's what we're going to discuss in this episode. Today's guest teaches people how to create content that leaves an indelible impression. She is the author of the book, Make a Killing with Content, Turn Content into Profits with a Strategy for Blogging and Content Marketing. And she also offers strategy sessions that are designed to look at what's working and what's not working in your content marketing. Today's guest for episode 162 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Lacey Boggs. Lacey, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. I feel like we need like applause sounds right now. That was such a great intro.
Lacey, I'm really happy that you like the intro, and I'm really looking forward to diving into this episode today, because a lot of people, they're able to some people, they're getting like some engagement on their blog, like some traffic. Some people are getting a lot of traffic, but I feel like that big step is actually turning readers into buyers, which we're going to tackle throughout this episode. But I'd like to get some backstory first. So can you talk to us about what first attracted you to blogging and what your journey was like at the beginning stage?
Sure, absolutely. So I came most recently, like my last real job was in journalism. I was an associate editor for a magazine here in Colorado. And when I left that job, I started a food blog because I was their food writer. I'm actually an award-winning food writer. And so naturally, like it seemed like, of course, I should have a food blog, right? And what I realized was that I was really good at the blogging part. Like I could get a lot of people to pay attention. I could build a list. I got really high profile guest posting gigs and stuff like that. But the business model of food blogging was really difficult. It's a very much like a numbers game with food blogging. You have to have thousands and thousands of readers to make any money. And so I start needing to make money quicker than that. I started thinking, well, maybe somebody else would pay me to write their blogs for them. And it turned out, yes, they would. And so there was a real demand for that kind of service. And so from there, I took it upon myself to learn as much as I could about marketing business through blogging, because I had the writing part down, but I did a lot of education and invested heavily in learning how to do the marketing piece.
And it's interesting how you just started with the food blog and then you expanded from there. I mean, when I first started, I wrote a blog about the Boston Red Sox, which,
yeah,
it's just like that thing that you really enjoy. You get started with it and you could create a few blogs later. So some people, like they pick their first blog, they're completely committed to it. But if you're blogging and you realize you want to explore this topic or something else, don't be afraid to publish that second blog and see if that next topic is the right one for you.
Totally, totally. And it turns out, I mean, I still have my food blog. It's just a hobby now. I don't make any money off of it, but it's still something I enjoy. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
And for any blog, like even for a blog that's more like a hobby versus one that's able to accumulate revenue, which as Lacey pointed out, like there is nothing wrong with that. As long as you are making some money in, you can also do blogging as a hobby as well. But I feel like regardless of how serious we take blogging, we all want to get readers for a person who's blogging for a hobby out of enjoyment. They want people to see their content. For people who have blogging as like their career path, like getting visitors is going to pay the bills, bring in the revenue. So how do we attract readers to our content?
Yeah, I think, you know, you write about the Red Sox, you know, but I think there's like a baseball metaphor here. You know, you remember that Field of Dreams movie? A lot of people think that when they build a blog, people will come. If I build it, they will come. That's totally not true anymore. Like, we have to do the promotional work that goes along with it. Just creating content, in fact, just creating great content is not enough anymore. You know, when I got started, there was an element of, there were less blogs out there. And so, you know, if you were just in a space that wasn't crowded, you might get discovered. That's no longer the case. I can't really think of any niche that hasn't been plumbed at this point. So, you know, you have to get out there and do some kind of promotion of your blog, whether that's through social media or advertising, or one of my favorite ways is to find other people who have a similar audience that you want to attract and make some kind of partnership where you can get in front of their audience to promote your work, whether that's through a guest post, a podcast interview like this, doing a webinar for their people, whatever it might be. But, you know, too many bloggers, I think that blogging ends when you press post or press publish, but really that's just the beginning. You still have to do a lot of work to promote yourself in order to reap the benefits of the blog.
And I love this idea that you're not done when you hit publish, because yeah. I feel like a lot of people, they follow what Brian Dean likes to call the publish and pray approach, where you just hit publish. You hope you get lucky, kind of like rolling something on roulette, and you just hope that it lands right. You hope it goes viral, but you have to put in that work after you publish the blog post in order for it to spread. And you did point out something that is really important, where like back then it was easier to get a lot of people on your blog because there weren't as many. And you can see this with a lot of trends. Like Google AdWords used to be really, really cheap, and now it's a more expensive on the price. And you see like a lot of these changes happening where there's more demand for things like blogging, podcasting, video, advertising, a lot of different things that are happening online. So for someone who doesn't have a blog yet and they're thinking it's too late for me, what advice do you have for them?
Okay, well, it's never too late, first of all. And I don't think like there's been... I mean, over the time I've been doing this, which is about 6 years now, I've seen several times where big people in the industry have said, blogging is dead. And, it, you know, blogging's not dead. I really don't think that. But I guess, let me back up for just a second. And I do want to make a distinction between blogging as a business and blogging for a business, because they're very different models. So, you know, if you're running a Red Sox blog or a food blog or a fashion blog or whatever it might be, and the blog is your product, in other words, you're selling advertising on the blog or doing something along those lines, that's blogging as a business. If you're blogging for a business where the content is in service of selling something else, whether that's like a physical product or consulting or some other kind of service, they're very different models in how you approach it. You know, so for like blogging for a business, traffic is your number one thing because, right, you get paid by the eyeballs. blogging to support a business is different, right? Because traffic is less important than the conversion. So I just wanted to make that distinction before we go any further in case people get confused. But I don't think it's too late to blog. I think, though, that you have to have a comprehensive content marketing strategy. Like, how do all the pieces fit together, right? I kind of think of it as a hub and spoke model. So your blog is the hub, right? That's where the main thrust of your content is going to be. And this could be, you mentioned it in the intro, but this could be your podcast or your video blog. But, you know, I just use blog as sort of a catch-all term. But your blog is the hub, and then everything else is the spokes. It all leads back to it or from it. So, you know, your Facebook post leads back to your blog post so that you can get the conversion if you're a business, or you can get the advertising dollars if you're blogging as your business. So it's not too late to jump on the blogging bandwagon, but it's more complicated now. You have to have the whole system in place.
And I'd also say, like, the people who did get an early start, they've had to also make these updates. It's not like people can just like anyone can just like publish content and people just keep coming to it. There are people who have been blogging for a very long time who they have to adapt to the new culture, the new change, because there are a lot of different blogs and content in general that are competing for our attention. So we need to do as good of a job as possible at getting in front of people, turning unaware people into readers. But after we get them to read our content, the next step is to get them to buy, like the next main step. I know there are like some steps in between. One of the most common ways that I hear for turning a reader into a buyer is getting them to the opt-in page, having an autoresponder in there, and then getting the sale through the autoresponder. Do you think that's the only approach or the main approach for getting readers into buyers, or is there anything else we could be doing also?
Yeah. So, I mean, I totally think it depends what you're selling, first of all, and then also what your goals are overall for your business. So if you're selling something that is like an instant download, or, I mean, like if you're selling a product, like a widget, then getting people on your list and sending them a coupon and there's your autoresponder and then you make the sale, that's totally legit. Like, this is a very legitimate way to go about it. But for example, I sell a high-end service. It's very unlikely that somebody's going to get on my email list, read 3 or 4 emails from me, and then buy a $2,500 service from me just because they've read a couple of emails, right? It takes a lot more nurturing and a lot more hand-holding to get somebody to purchase something that's a higher-end product, right? And so for me, it's much more beneficial for me to say, like, here's how you can get on a phone call with me, or here's how you can apply for a session, or here's how you can chat with me in a messenger bot. Like, there's lots of different ways I can make that a more personal experience. But generally, when you're selling a higher priced product or a higher investment thing, and the investment here can be money or time or energy, it's better to do something a little more personal than just an autoresponder. I mean, I know there are outliers and there are really great marketers who can sell something to people via email no matter what. But for a lot of people, especially if you're just getting started, doing a more personal touch, like getting on a phone call, is a much faster and easier way to make those sales.
And Lacey brings up a very interesting point, because you can do the autoresponder for like a $7 product, a $47 product. Some people have gone as high as like $2,000, but that's usually through a lot of nurturing and a webinar. But for Lacey, who she's charging a higher price than $2,000 for her service, she is getting people on the phone. And if you want to charge over $2,000 for something, or get someone involved as a client with a long-term relationship, like coaching or service or anything like that, phone calls are definitely the best way to go. So I just wanted to point out that distinction. And it's a really, like, I feel like a lot of people think landing page, autoresponder, but it doesn't always work like that, where you just get them on the phone and have that more personal touch to the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also want to point out, like, just personally, and I've seen this with clients as well, sometimes a low price tripwire is not a good lead-in to your higher priced offer. So for example, I have a tripwire that's $29. It's great. It does really well. But then very few of those people that pay the $29 for that tripwire will convert to my $2,500 one-on-one service. They might be likely to buy a $300, you know, course or a $500 course, but they're much less likely to go ahead and invest in that much higher level thing. So you have to consider, like, what are your goals overall? Are my goals to sell those mid-level prices? Well, then that's great. Maybe my tripwire is a really great strategy. If my goal is to sell more of the higher priced services, then maybe the tripwire is actually not a great strategy for me. Even though I'm getting money, it may not be benefiting me in the long run.
So just based on your response, I mean, it seems like you've done a lot of experimenting to see, like, what works the best. You've had a bunch of clients and you've given them guidance on different formats, like the call or the tripwire and the autoresponder. And I'm wondering, how do we increase the percentage of readers that become buyers? So let's say, like, you have a system in place already that's getting some of them to become customers, but I'm buyers, but how do we increase that percentage?
Yeah, that's a great question. And unfortunately, there's not like a blanket answer I can give you. But what I would do with a client is we would look at everything they've got and say, where are people dropping off? So you've got something that's making success. You know, some people are going through and becoming clients. But where does that drop off happen? You know, is it in email number 4? They just stop, you know, opening after that? Or where are we seeing people fall out? Where are the holes in our funnel? You know, if we're envisioning this as a funnel, which is the thing people always talk about, where are the holes? Where are people leaking out and how can we fix it? You know, if we can tell from email stats or whatever it is that, okay, we're doing great up until email 3 or email 4, then we can experiment. We can change up email 3 and email 4 to see if we can get people going, or we can change the subject line on email 5 that they're not opening, or we can make the offer earlier. You know, so if you can kind of visualize what's actually happening once you have some data, you can make those judgments better in terms of how can I fix this or how can I improve this? Unfortunately, I feel like there's not like a blanket answer I can give. But I will say that in terms of content marketing to drive people to sales, blogging, and that sort of thing, what I find is that most of the time, there's one of two problems. Either people are not mentioning that they sell things, like there's no call to action to get people into the funnel in the first place. They're just writing, or maybe they're being of service. They're writing great how-to articles or whatever it might be, but there's no call to action. So that would be problem number one. Or the second one is that they're not taking people on the full journey. So they might be getting people really interested, but then they never give them all the information they need to decide to make a purchase. One of the big metaphors I use is like, you have to think of your content as rocks in a river. If your potential customers are on one side of the river and the sales are on the other side, you have to get them all the way across, and there have to be enough rocks and spaced appropriately so that they don't fall in the river and wash away, right? So when you think of it that way, you have to make sure that you're actually taking people on the journey, which I find is often a problem. So it might be in your blogging, it might be in your email sequences, but you're just sort of making some assumptions somewhere and you're losing people and they're falling in the river.
Now, the important thing to get from this is, yeah, there is no like blanket answer. It's not like change your font green, Times New Roman, but just like it's about the principles. So if you're just looking at your funnel and seeing where people are dropping off, like the tactics you use can be different based on where you see that drop off, but just knowing those principles, such as looking to see where that drop off is happening, is going to help you increase the percentage of readers who do become customers. And with blogging, I mean, Lacey and I could both attest to this. It's not the easiest thing in the world. It's doable, but it's not easy. But with that in mind, I'm wondering, what do you believe holds most bloggers back from achieving the revenue that they want to achieve?
And that's a really good point. I think the thing I see most often is that people are afraid to ask for the sale, whether that's in the blog or in their email, you know, in an autoresponder sequence. So you almost never ask for the sale directly in a blog post. You're very rarely going to put a big buy now button in the middle of a blog post unless you sell like $4 scissors or something. But what you're asking for is a yes, right? You're asking them to make a decision to continue with you, opt in for something, get on a call, whatever it might be. And most of the time, I find that people are afraid to ask for the sale, whatever it might be, because they're afraid. They're like, oh, people are going to be mad because I usually give away all this free stuff and now I'm charging for it. Or they're going to unsubscribe because all I'm doing is selling. Or I think people really overestimate how much they're selling and they need to do more than what they're doing. I was talking to a friend just recently and she was saying that she needed to remind people what she does. Like, she's a speaking coach and she has a podcast and has a popular blog and a popular email list and she gets subscribers all the time, but she forgets to tell them how they can work with her. and so people, she actually gets emails. It's like, how do I give you money? And that's a good problem to have, but you should be able to work that into the conversation so they know how to give you money, you know?
And that's like a lot of the problems you hear about with blogging are how exactly do I get more revenue? And it's interesting how in some cases, like, I think we should all look at what we're doing and see, are we clearly articulating how people can work with us, how people can pay for our products or services? So it's also interesting to look at how we are positioning ourselves and talking about what we do. So I definitely see like asking for the sale. That's something that we all have to work on little by little to get better at that skill. But you also want to make sure you are clearly letting people know about all the offers that you're providing. And you talked about another client who has been someone who's been one of your services. That link, by the way, will be in the show notes for anyone interested in having Lacey go through your blog and your content brand, see what's working and what's not working. But back when you were just starting, I'm wondering, what is one challenge that you faced in your blogging journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge?
Oh man, I don't have to go that far back. I'm learning all the time. Like, things are changing and you learn more stuff every day in this business, I feel like. You know, one thing I learned relatively recently, I'd say 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, is something you alluded to in the introduction. Like, I got really focused on growing my list because I felt like I needed, you know, more people on my email list. And so I implemented a lot of strategies for that. And one of the things I implemented was a really robust content upgrade program, whereas almost every blog post I wrote had a companion worksheet or download so that people could opt in and download something that went with it. And people loved it. I think I ended up over the course of a year having like more than 40 different opt-ins, and it worked exceptionally well. I don't know, doubled my opt-in rate, something like that. The problem was I hadn't thought out the big picture. And so the people that I was attracting for these freebies weren't necessarily interested in what I had to sell, which is a very difficult lesson to learn because, I was giving away a lot of information, and the people that were opting in for it in general were interested in getting it for free. They weren't interested in paying me to help them achieve a goal or to get pay for a course or whatever it might be. And I had to learn that lesson the hard way, you know, because, and it's really silly because when I was working at the magazine, for example, our publisher would often really dissuade advertisers from running coupons. And she would tell them, if you run a coupon, you're only going to get the coupon shoppers. You're only going to get the people who come when they have a coupon. And that's exactly what I was doing with those opt-ins, right? I got all these people who were interested in opting in. They opened my emails, like my open rates and click-through rates were good, but they didn't want to buy anything. they were coupon shoppers, right? They were freebie seekers. And I'm seeing this more and more. I'm seeing more and more of my clients frustrated with freebie seekers. And the trend, to my way of thinking, is becoming less towards, here, download this free worksheet, and more towards, get on this call, get on this webinar, do something that's going to lead much more directly to a sale, because it sort of eliminates a lot of the freebie seekers. So I think that was something I had to learn the hard way, was that like the numbers on the list are important, but only if you have your big picture goals in mind, because anybody can go out and spend $10,000 and build their list, right? But whether or not those people are going to buy is a totally different question.
And it's really interesting you mentioned the coupon shoppers, because one of the things I do is I'm also an Udemy instructor. So I have like over 20 courses mm-hmm. on Udemy. And I always notice that like maybe there are like a maximum of 5 people. I have over 80,000 students throughout these courses, but probably a max of like 5 or 10. Like, it's a very small handful of people who have actually paid mm-hmm. the full price, because Udemy is a site where you know that the coupon code is coming. So if you offer too many coupons and too many discounts, your audience will be conditioned to expect them and not buy anything from you until you offer that discount. So mm-hmm. Discounts, they can be good in the short term for getting sales, but if you do offer them, make sure you're not conditioning your audience to expect discounts from you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can give you a great example of this. I actually had a woman buy my course that I had on offer about how to build an editorial calendar. And then I have a no questions asked refund policy. She asked for a refund and said in her email that she thought there was going to be different advice in the course than what she got from the blog. And there's additional advice in the course, but it's not different. Like, it's the same basic principles. I was really surprised that someone thought they were going to get completely different advice in the paid version than the free version. But I think it also woke me up to the idea that people are consuming all that free content and there was maybe no reason for them to buy the paid thing. You see what I'm saying? So like, I was actually the problem there, not so much the freebie seekers. I was giving away maybe too much. I believe in giving away a lot. I believe in giving away your best stuff because that's what helps people understand and that you're an expert and trust you. But I think for me to like have all those freebies and then try to sell a DIY course was not the right strategy for me.
And I feel like this is a very important topic. Like a lot of people, some people, they just want to hide everything away and present it to you when you hire them as a coach or when you buy the course. Other people, they just throw out all the information for free, provide a lot of value, but feel like they're providing too much value and that there's no reason to buy the products. So how do you find that sweet spot where you are able to, like you're offering a lot of value that is free, but there's also a lot of good reasons people should buy your paid stuff also?
Mm-hmm. I think that's such a huge problem. You know, the sweet spot I have found for myself and a lot of my clients lately is twofold. First, there's kind of a rule of thumb that I like to say you can give away the why and sell the how, or give away the how and sell the why. that's kind of if you do one or the other, then you're still giving value in the paid product, right? The other thing I can say is that like, when I'm selling a higher end consulting service, for example, I can't possibly give that on a blog post. There's just no way. I cannot replicate that experience of me looking at your business, looking at your goals, helping you come up with a complete custom plan for your marketing through a blog post, right? So for me now, as my business has matured, my content doesn't compete with my service anymore because I can't possibly replicate the service through the blog, right? It's completely different. Like I can still show that I'm an expert. I can build my brand. I can get loyal people. I can share information, but I can't possibly give a custom solution through the blog. And one of my soapboxes I've been on recently is to really ask business owners in particular to question why they're writing so many how-to posts. I think we've all been conditioned to some respect that the how-to post is what we should all be writing. And, you know, it's good for SEO or it's what people are searching for or whatever it might be. But my question to people has become like, is this actually in service of what you're selling? Like if I'm telling you how to do something, then why do you need to pay me to do it? I mean, there's always going to be that thing where I can say, here's how to do it. And it's really complicated and I can do it for you if you pay me, right? We're in this service economy right now where I can go on TaskRabbit and have somebody put together my IKEA furniture, even though there's how-tos that come in the box, right? There's always going to be that sort of luxury service aspect that you can sell. But for most business owners, I would say like, why are you doing the how-to? Maybe you should be doing the why instead. Maybe you should be flipping it, you know? And if you're selling the how-to, you don't want to be blogging about the how-to necessarily as well. You want to be blogging about the why if you're selling the how.
I really like that distinction between the why and the how, because if you keep talking about how for free and then how is the product, then there's going to be a lot of overlap there. So I really like including the why for creating the product or just service also, because I feel there are a lot of how-tos out there. I feel like those are running through the web, but I don't see as many whys, which is something I'm really happy that you pointed out. And I feel like one of the reasons you're able to make that observation is because you mentioned before, you're still learning about blogging. Like, I think that's for a lot of bloggers and content creators in general. They're continuing to learn more about their craft. And with that in mind, I'm wondering if you could share with us three great books that you believe will have a positive impact on us.
Oh, that's interesting. Three great books. It's going to be hard for me to remember the titles. So right off the top of my head, one of my favorites is Essentialism by Greg McKeown. It's not a business book per se, but it's about focusing on the essential in your life rather than the excess. It's kind of a middle ground between minimalism and like regular American life. And I really resonate with the idea of essentialism much more than minimalism. Minimalism has the connotation of like, you get rid of everything, whether that's in your life or your business. Essentialism is more about like, find what are the things that are actually essential to what you're doing. And it does have a business and a blogging implication. Like, don't do more than is necessary, right? Let's have a business that's all about ease. So do the things that are essential rather than just everything on your plate. Another one is called Non-Obvious. I think that's what it's called. he comes out with an update. I'm actually going to pull up my Goodreads while I'm talking so I can tell you what it's actually called. He does an update every year. So there's like a Non-Obvious 2017, 2018. And what it is this man has made a career out of understanding trends. Yes. Okay. So the full title is Non-Obvious, How to Think Different, Curate Ideas, and Predict the Future. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name because I'll butcher it. But basically, his whole career, his whole job is about spotting trends, right? And so each year he updates this book. And so if you get the 2018 version, he'll say like, these are the things I see happening in culture. And it's totally broad. So you could apply it to any business, any niche, but he's pointing out like, these are the things I see in the zeitgeist that are influencing us all culturally. And it's really great for thinking about your products, for thinking about innovation, for thinking about just all kinds of things that are sort of big picture business topics. And then I'll give you one that's a little more specific to content. My friend Bushra Azar has written a book called The Mass Persuasion Method. And she's very smart in terms of the psychological triggers that will get people to take action. So that will get people to just adore you, become raving fans, and open their wallets for you. So I believe that's just an ebook on Amazon, but it's well worth whatever she's charging for it because it's a great book and she's a very smart lady.
Lacey, thank you for sharing those great book recommendations with us. Those book links and the show notes will be over at marketbirdie.com/E162. And I'll throw in another content marketing book, which is my book, Content Marketing Secrets, which teaches people how to create, promote, and optimize their content for growth and revenue. That link will be in the show notes. MarkGuberti.com/book is the link if you want to go straight to the book on Amazon. And before we go, Lacey, I've asked you several questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Why? I think that's the biggest question that I see business owners neglect, is asking themselves why they are doing a certain thing. So we get so caught up in the next shiny object, whatever that might be. You know, like, oh, we have to run Facebook ads. Oh, we have to do a webinar. Oh, we have to get on Snapchat. Oh, we have to get on whatever the next thing is. The question I would ask always is why? What is the point? Is how is it going to help you reach your goal faster? Because I would say probably 9 times out of 10, it's not. And training myself to ask this question, I'm still training myself to ask this question because I will get these fun ideas in the middle of the night and be like, oh, I should do this. I should start a podcast. I should have a membership site. I should do this. And when I really dig into why am I actually doing that? A lot of times it's like, okay, well, that's not actually going to move me towards my business goals. So when you get really clear on your goal, you can ask yourself that why question, and it helps you focus and actually put your energy where it's most needed and going to be most effective.
Lacey, thank you for sharing with us that great one-word question and for sharing all of your great insights to our time together. And if you guys want to schedule a one-on-one strategy session with Lacey, you can head over to laceyboggs.com/undercover, where basically you're going to learn from her some of the things that you're doing right, some of the ways that you can improve so you can optimize your content brand and generate more traffic and revenue. And she also has a free editorial calendar template, which you can all pick up at laceyboggs.com/breakthrough success. That is all one word, breakthrough success, no dash or anything like that. That's where you can pick up your free editorial calendar template. Lacey, I cannot thank you enough for sharing your great insights throughout this episode. It was a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn more and get access to this free resource, visit markgoberti.com/retweets.